Wherever there is injustice, you will find us.
Wherever there is suffering, we'll be there.
Wherever liberty is threatened, you will find...
The Three Amigos!
Wow.
Oh, man.
I think we nailed that.
That's magic.
Perfect.
Remakers Mark, Episode 22, Three Amigos.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to Remakers Mark. Here we are discussing in episode 22, our second half discussion of The Three Amigos. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you doing tonight, and what is your favorite of The Three Amigos?
I am well, thank you, and my favorite amigo is Ned Nederlander. He is just, he's full of surprises.
Agreed. Jeremy Nilsson, how are you, and who is your favorite amigo?
I'm fantastic, and I would have to say Lucky Day is my favorite.
Good choice.
Thank you.
Leha Soccer Mom, who is your favorite amigo, and how are you this fine evening?
I'm great, and I would have to also say Lucky Day.
Nice.
Just because I like Steve Martin.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
And Mark Josting, how are you, and who is your favorite amigo?
I'm great, thanks. And my favorite amigo would be Ned. For a lot of reasons, but chiefly because he's got the best magic chant.
Amen to that.
Yep. Yep. Agreed. Nice. I am Kyle Delahunt. I will be your host again on Remakers Mark. And, you know, I'll give Dusty some love. I don't know if he's my favorite, but I don't want him to be misrepresented or unrepresented here. So, Dusty, I got you, buddy. I got you. All right, so before we continue our discussion of Three Amigos, I want to thank our friends at Modern Antics for their promotional consideration.
Modern Antics produces and markets hugely interesting events in bars and other cool places. New from Modern Antics, Riddle Room. Riddle Room is a live puzzle game unlike anything you've ever experienced. 12 people are locked in the bunker, and they have 1 hour to solve a series of increasingly difficult challenges before the clock runs out. Interested in other Modern Antics events? Check them out at modernantics.com or on Facebook and Twitter at Modern Antics.
All right. Thanks again to Modern Antics. I want to touch on some feedback that we got on Facebook and Twitter. We put out a call to see who in a modern remake or remake today, who would be recast in the various major roles. So the Chevy Chase, Steve Martin, and Martin Short roles. We got responses from both Facebook and Twitter. On Facebook, Partario Flynn, who I think is actually named Alex, who I remember from Flickr way back in the day, but I don't think he lives in the States anymore. But he had some strong words. He said, "I wouldn't, but I would gladly lace the cups of coffee in whatever schlock boardroom where it was being discussed with cyanide." So it seems as though let me know if I'm reading this wrong. He seems to not be in favor of a remake.
Because Partario agrees with me that this movie cannot be remade.
I feel like we lost a fan.
Andy, are you Partario Flynn?
I've said too much.
P is for Partario. And Beth Gusinius, I think it's Gusinius, sorry, Beth, says, "If Charlie Day isn't involved with this remake, there is no God." So, big words, man.
Yeah.
Facebook, bring out the strength.
Think of him?
None of us picked him, but I could see him.
I consider them strongly.
We did not choose
you. I thought for sure one of us would.
Yeah.
But.
You know, though, he doesn't fit a role in this movie, in my opinion. I mean, no slam on Charlie Day. He's fantastic, but I just don't see him. I could see him as playing a Flugelman, maybe.
I thought of him for Ned. Yeah, but it'd be a very different Ned than
it's
Martin
a very
Short.
Different Ned, yeah.
He wouldn't have the night.
Angry Ned.
Yep. Yep, shouty Ned. Jerry, you got some feedback from folks on your side of things, too. Do you want to read off a few of your Facebook folks?
I do want to do that. And firstly, Kimberly Sturtz, Iowa's own, gave a full cast list. Ned was Jim Parsons, Dusty Rain Wilson, Lucky Alan Tudyk, and El Guapo Thomas Lennon.
Awesome.
I very nearly considered Jim Parsons.
He just is always going to be that guy from Big Bang Theory to me.
Yeah, it's too bad.
I'm going to have a hard time finding a new role for him. I do like, I also had Alan Tudyk on my list, and Thomas Lennon as El Guapo is inspired. Christopher Grapp, who is a friend of the podcast and some of the other Modern Antics events, chose Baz Rutan for El Guapo. I'm pretty sure that he did that because Baz Rutan is not formerly an MMA fighter who went by the name El Guapo. but he's also been in some movies, and he looks menacing as all get out. So it's I'd true. Go for it. and then he chose for the Amigos Eddie Murphy, Martin Lawrence, and Will Smith, which...
Yep.
Sure. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I am vehemently opposed to Martin Lawrence, but the others, I can get on board with that.
Yeah,
I agree.
Frequent contributor Jess Angus McCullough chose Paul Rudd as El Guapo.
I like it.
And another friend of the podcast, Martin Kretzmann, casts himself as the bartender.
And that is an inspired pick. Yep.
My little buttercup. Yep. Good one, Martin. I like it.
Thanks, Martin.
Indeed. And then on Twitter, a frequent contributor and friend of the show, Josh Freeman, who's at jfreeman159, suggested Ed Helms, Jimmy Fallon, and either Sarah Silverman or Jason Sudeikis.
Oh, man.
And then kind of a back and forth with Brian Moen, who we'll get to here in a little bit. And they've talked about kind of the SNL nature of that and said that, yeah, I know Sudeikis and Fallon would get lumped into the SNL silo, but both have done well since. The other two aren't. He also said it would be awesome to cast a female as one of the Amigos. Sarah came to mind because she can be serious yet quirky like Martin Short, which I think is great. And then Brian Moen, who I just mentioned, who's at Emobi, who we talk about a lot, who helps me out with Math is Hard a lot, suggested Kristen Wiig, Amy Poehler, and Maria Bamford as the three Amigas.
Oh, man.
And that's...
Love that.
I want to see that very badly. That would
Bamford
be fantastic.
Would add a nice little twist to that little trio.
Yep.
She would be Ned for sure.
I could see her being Dusty Bottoms too. I think that'd be pretty great. Little Clueless. Man. Yeah, that's fantastic. I would very, yes. very much want to see that. And good friend of the show and of us all, Kyle Hoff, who's at Hoff Kyle, suggested Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly, and Steve Carell. I mean, that's a power trio if ever there was one right there. And then he wrote, bam. So I think he was rather proud of that, deservedly so. He was so excited when I mentioned that we were doing Three Amigos. I could hear the shouting through my Twitter stream about how excited he was. About
I do. That was almost instantaneous when he replied, this is the one I've been waiting for.
So, Kyle, I hope we do it justice for you. He did suggest that we do an Amigos salute at some point. So I don't know how we'll work that out, but we'll have to
find a way to close the show with that one.
There you go. There you go. Steve Grotham, who is a frequent contributor and helper of the networks, was at Glebe on Twitter, said the same actors playing the others' roles. I kind of like that.
Nice little challenge.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah. Flip it for real. And then finally, Dan Bailey, who's at Fontasaurus, suggested Seth Rogen, Nick Kroll, and Charlie Day. And they even hashtagged it Three Amigos 2014. I was like, man, nice work. Created a hashtag. I got to remember to do stuff like that. I always forget to do clever things like that. So, yeah, those are good picks too. Especially, I thought about Nick Kroll as El Guapo. So, yeah.
So, would Seth, I would see Seth Rogen as Dusty, Nick Kroll as Lucky, I guess.
Yeah.
And Charlie Day as Ned.
I guess, yeah. Oh, I could see that.
That's definitely a little more of a bitter Three Amigos.
Yeah.
And that's what I had the biggest problem with when I was originally casting people is that it was going to be a really sarcastic bunch of Amigos. And I think that kind of goes against the original vibe of it where they were just so sincere and so honest and you know, in what they were trying to do. And so many comedians now are just so sarcastic and bitter, even Charlie Day. And, to a certain degree, Joel McHale and that kind of thing. Like they're, it's just so biting and so sarcastic.
Yeah, they would have to be the three bitter rivals or something.
Yep. And then, Jaron, Mark, you guys both had, kind of a second tier or a second group of actors respectively. Jared, do you want to start? And then Mark, do you want to follow with your other picks for your roles?
I would love to do it that way because I did an all British sort of themed episode there where I kind of picked something very specific. I had a backup plan in case I didn't like that at the last minute, and I ultimately went with it. But so my secondary set is I'll go out of order here, but I had Paul Rudd as Lucky, Steve Zahn as Ned, James Franco as Dusty, and because my alternate pick was Harry Flugelman, I went with Rob Corddry as Harry Flugelman.
Oh, man. Corddry. That's brilliant. Boom. Oh, that's really good. I like those a lot. Nice. And Mark, how about you? What was your second crew, your B squad? Maybe A minus.
Well, I was really entertained by the notion of this being set in England and having not necessarily three amigos, but maybe the Gentleman Three. And it would probably be Dusty, played by Stephen Fry, Ned, played by Simon Pegg, and Lucky, played by Ralph Fiennes.
Oh my
God. Wow.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah,
the three lads.
Yeah, I kind of wanted it to be them helping out villagers in the French countryside, but ultimately I couldn't figure out how there would be a villain involved in a way that would make sense.
Still a valiant effort, yeah. I must say. Wow, I love it. Stephen Fry. Man, I love that guy. Nice. Okay, so that wraps up the feedback and alternate casting side of things. Now let's go on to who we chose from our various picks. So in the role of Dusty, Mark was the big winner with his choice of Bill Hader.
Yay!
In the role of Lucky, originally played by Steve Martin, we went with my pick of Scott Aukerman.
Hot Saucerman.
Yes.
Hot Saucerman. The role of Ned, originally played by Martin Short, we went with Andy's choice of Will Wheaton, which is inspired, if ever there was one. Mm-hmm. That was great.
Thank you.
And then the minor role that was chosen was Mark's choice of Fred Armisen for the role of El Jefe. Mm-hmm. Man.
I want to see that.
I know. That
mental image. It's a sweater.
It's a sweater. Oh, Lord. I love it. So that wraps up the casting choices. So the big winner there was Mark. Mark, congratulations.
Thank
well
you.
Done.
Thank you. Good it feels job. Good to be there again.
Yeah, he had the minor and the Bill Hader pick, so nice work on that. So now up next in terms of picking is me going alphabetically, and we are going to be going with the anime classic Akira. We are going to, I think, remake it as a live-action film, and we'll see exactly what that looks like and how we'll do that, but I'm super excited about that. That has been a movie that has inspired many, many films, both anime and live-action, especially things like The Matrix. So I'm really excited to see kind of the futuristic aspect of that, kind of the action side of that, the weaponry. Yeah, I'm just super jazzed about that. So Akira will be our next film. So thanks for agreeing to do that, you fine fellows. I'm really, really excited about that. All right, now let's move on to our discussion of The Three Amigos, the plot, tech, and filmmaking changes to that film. So the first thing that we sort of talked about, you know, we all really, really like this movie. There wasn't a lot that we had qualms with, so I don't think there's going to be a lot of umbrage in this. I think there's going to be a lot of appreciation, and then a lot of sort of suggestions about different ways that the three amigos could be met. The three lads has been one that's discussed. Three chaps, I don't know, maybe something like that. So
I like the Gentleman Three.
The Gentleman Three, I like it. The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Three.
No,
sorry. I don't want to taint the three amigos with that tripe. So we talked about alternate settings a little bit. So if a few folks here had some ideas on that. Andy, do you want to start us off with some discussion of alternate settings that you had in mind?
I actually was talking a little bit when we were discussing this in pre-production about how I appreciate the Westernness of this. We talked a little bit about how I feel it's been, if not redone, maybe referenced in a couple more recent movies. I was thinking of Tropic Thunder or Galaxy Quest, when you have actors who are suddenly put into the real life situations, you know, which they portray fictionally. And those obviously were in very different settings in Southeast Asia and also space. But in a odd space world. But I appreciate that this is a, even though it's kind of a Western, you know, genre type, but it actually takes place in Mexico, not, you know, Arizona or New Mexico or Texas or something like that. I guess I appreciate that it's really more of a Mexican rather than a Western, if that's a thing. It is a thing because I just said it.
Sort of a Southern.
I spoke it into existence. So yeah, I guess, I don't know, I don't have much discussion beyond that because really I'm just saying talking points.
Very good. Lee, you had some thoughts as well. What did you have on your side of things?
I just threw out a few ideas of, you know, being in a different country, like Russia or Sicily or Ireland or North Korea, someplace where, you know, you could really play up the fish out of water vibe. In my in my comments about North Korea, I wanted it to end with Kim Jong-un getting an atomic wedgie.
I like that.
No.
Just as a general principle.
I like Jer's idea of having the original Amigo actors all be British silent actor films and being thrust into...
Yeah, that's...
I think that's a really
good
twist.
Idea. Yeah.
Not enough to vote for them, but...
but enough to discuss in passing.
Not that you're bitter. Oh, that was good.
It was one of those ideas that was not greater than the sum of its parts. Somehow is lesser. I don't know. Just kidding, Jer. I'm sorry. That was
it was neither forest nor trees.
I'm going to take it as the compliment that it was meant to be.
Sure.
There you go. Mark, do you want to flesh out your idea of the Gentleman 3 a little bit more? Or do you feel like you've touched on that enough?
Yeah, I don't know. When we were doing pre-production, I read Lee's comment about it being in Ireland, and I love the idea of it being set in Great Britain, but somehow the Irish never seem like a people that need saving.
They're tough MFers, yeah. Is what you're trying to say.
Irish villagers, well, they got some moxie.
Well, I think that could play with, you know, these people swooping in, you know, hearing about it. Maybe it's an overzealous citizen that's getting picked on or disagrees with his neighbor and they ask for the amigos. And then they come in to save the day that doesn't need to be saving. And so they think that these are a very weak people. You know, that could be an interesting environment in which they ride into.
It could. I feel it's a little bit contradictory to the major, you know, premise of the film. But, mm-hmm. And that's why I mentioned the French, because they seem like a people that would need more saving.
It's true. To all our French listeners,
my apologies.
Sorry, but you know it's true.
To all one of them?
Yeah, to all zero of them. I don't know. I'll have to look at our stats, see if we've got any French folk listening. I'm not sure.
You know, but
and you mentioned some Swiss jokes as well?
Yeah, I think, I don't know what it is about the Swiss, but... I like to make fun of them as much as I admire them.
Do you despise neutrality? Is that the idea? Or?
No, it's just you know what it is? It's they're too good.
Nobody makes fun of the Swiss, so I think it's time to take them down.
And
you hate quality craftsmanship
and fine chocolates
and gourmet cuisine. Yeah.
Give me high quality timepieces.
And don't get me started on how confusing their knives are.
But you can't argue with those bank accounts, guys. Come on now.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just bitter because I don't know how to speak Romansh.
Do you? What? I was trying to echo your, I bet you do. I failed. Sorry. Never mind. Jerry, you had some good ideas as far as alternate settings on this. Do you want to jump in that? You had some really good ones.
Yes. Why, thank you for affirming my ideas.
You are good, Jer.
Tell me I'm good.
You're good.
I was thinking that because of this movie, it's basically a movie within a movie to a point, and it takes place during the silent film era, and the whole gist of it is these actors being thrust into the situation that they've always portrayed on the screen. And in the case of Three Amigos, it was, you know, Old West, Westerns, and... In the silent film era, the only other sort of very pervasive style of film that I know of is a lot of war movies, like World War One type movies. And so I thought it would be an interesting sort of redo to have the Three Amigos, instead of being cowboys in the Old West, they were like World War One flying aces, and they were, you know, they were biplane fighter pilots and having to face down maybe a rogue squadron of some other type, some other villain in the hills of France or wherever it might be. And so basically do the exact same concept where they are then thrust into actually having to fly planes or behind enemy lines or something like that, but it's in the war or the burgeoning war of maybe even the precursor steps to World War II, and suddenly they think that this small village thinks they're these flying aces and they don't even know how to fly planes at all.
Yeah, I like nice. That a lot. All right. Jerry, you also had a part B to this discussion, which is sort of the timeless aspect to the original about how it starts off with a placard saying it's set in 1916, but it could essentially work in any time or, as we've discussed here, place, but the time specifically. Do you want to talk a little bit about that as well?
I think what I most meant in the timelessness of the movie is in how it was filmed and the feeling of the movie itself. I don't think that I would want to set it in a different time period. I think the silent film era works for the movie. Maybe the setting of the movies might be changed, like I just said. But to me, the movie itself, as a quote unquote 80s comedy, feels, even though it kind of comes in a time where comedies were just running rampant and so many of them were so good and so classic, now that we look back at them, this movie doesn't feel like an 80s comedy. It feels like a comedy. And it could it could have been made in the 60s or the 50s. It could have been made in the 80s. It could have been made now. And I think that not a lot of it would have changed. And I think a lot of that has to do with the way that it was filmed and the way that the characters were written. But even if you look at the movie, like, it has a lot of studio backlot sort of moments to it. Like, it was actually filmed in the 20s or the teens. Like, there's a lot of great matte painting, sunsets and cactus skies, and even like when they're in the cantina in Mexico, like it's backdrops and it's paintings and stuff, and it's a real basic set. And so I think they really went kind of lo-fi with it, and I really appreciate that about it.
Yeah, I did as well. I mean, I love a good matte painting, so I'm sort of biased towards that. But yeah, I like the scene where they're going to sleep. That is just the perfect scene for me. I just love so much how they did that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so obviously a matte painting, but it's perfect because of that. And then they like take that obviousness and continue it along to have like the coyote singing along and the horses singing along and the turtle saying good night, Ned. I mean, just like all that stuff that just is that could be individually completely preposterous, that all together just made it like, all right, you got me. This is so great. I love that aspect of it. I think that's a really good description. I think it's a very, I have some qualms with the shtick, which we'll get to in a little bit here. But overall, I think it plays to some universal things that have existed throughout sort of like all of entertainment. And it's a better movie because of that.
Well, and the other thing, I guess, in that same vein is, in the age of CG, how do we recapture that sort of classic nostalgic cinema magic would be the question I would pose.
Yeah, that's a good question.
More matte painting.
I'll say that. I think the answer is matte paintings.
Yeah, and just and a backlot set. Yeah.
I agree, Jared, that the way you described it, that this is, even though this is a classic comedy from the 80s, there's not that, I don't know, there's a certain feel to comedies that I think we associate with 80s comedies that isn't in this movie, that just speaks to its quality, that it's just simply we'll get to this in a little bit, but the quality of the characters, the quality of the actors, the quality of the story, so many things about it that were very much, that would be appreciated and equally, I think, equally favored in any decade.
Agreed.
Yeah. So let's move on to the performance side of things. So I'm going to start off just to give you a little bit of a breather here, Jerry. You've been going for a while, so apologies for picking on you, but you just had a lot of thoughts. I appreciate that. So I love this movie. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a great movie, and I love the mood of it. I have a very, like, I have a thin, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't have a lot of patience for shtick. It's great up to a point, and then when it hits that point, I don't suffer it very well. And this movie is like full of kind of that silly shtick, and you know, physical humor is great, don't get me wrong, but something about that type of humor just doesn't sit well with me, and this movie has a lot of it. But it somehow doesn't go overboard. The performances, the actors giving the performances are solid. Everybody is totally in it. There's nobody that has a wink. And I think we talked a lot about that in the casting side of this, the first half, which is everybody has that sincerity that, you know, they're just in this and, you know, this just who they are and what they're doing at that time. And I love that. And so somehow it never goes overboard for me. So it's just so much fun. So what normally would be something that I would struggle with, or I think I would have very little patience for, somehow it succeeds in this one. And I think it's a combination of all of those factors together as to why that's the case, but it really did. It succeeded in spite of a lot of the things that went into the movie. In reading about kind of the history of it and how it was received, it was not critically received very well. You know, Roger Ebert basically said it was his least favorite movie of the summer. It got fairly drubbed. It didn't do super great financially, but I think it's gone on to be pretty beloved. I mean, maybe it's just that all my friends, aka you guys, love it. So not all my friends, many of my friends, my closest movie guys, my closest movie friends adore this movie. And so I adore it because of that, because I have that connection, that emotional connection to it. But, you know, it seems like it's aged very well in that way. So I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you have any qualms with the shtick? Was it something that, you know, Andy, you talked about the physical humor and how much you love that. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. I agree with you that this, and I watched the movie again last night, and there, I don't think picked up anything new that I hadn't seen in my umpteen viewings before, but I did notice that there are gaffes, you could maybe call them gaffes, that maybe were left in intentionally, or just the editing was maybe poor enough that these things slipped through. Like the scene where Dusty Bottoms swings on the vine into the room where Carmen is being held, and the vine that he is on travels all the way through the room into the closet where he lands. Like that, it's schlocky, and it could be perceived as terrible editing. I think it's kind of funny. And there's also a scene where, when they're flying back to Santa Poco on the plane, trying to get away from El Guapo's men, there's kind of a wide shot where it shows them flying through, like weaving back and forth through a valley. And you can even see the plane tilts just so that you can see the fishing line holding the model up.
Yeah.
like it's, you know, little stuff like that, that I think in many other movies would be like fodder for Mystery Science Theater kind of critique. But in this movie, for some reason, I agree with you. I don't know why. Like, I just kind of give it a pass that it almost adds to the charm of the movie to me. And I don't know how to otherwise elaborate on it, because there are a lot of elements to this movie that are almost Monty Python-esque and kind of their wah, wah.
Yeah.
But don't detract from the movie. Almost they're ingredients in the soup that add to the flavor. So
yeah,
I think the movie would be lesser with those elements removed or corrected.
Yeah, the perfect example for me, and I just had to stop myself from just guffawing out loud thinking about it, was when Nettie is stuck up in the rafters of sorts in the
pinata.
In the pinatas. And when he falls down, the dummy, it hits like, it hits face first.
It's like a head first thug. Shot.
Oh my God, it's just awful. It's so obviously a dummy, but I just lost it. in many movies it'd be like, oh come on, but that, it just plays it perfectly, absolutely perfectly.
The scene where the amigos are trying, they're discussing the plan on how to get to break into the fortress, and the three soldiers like walk right past them. They just kind of, you know, they all just kind of freeze and they just walk right past them. Like, come on, that would be such a wah wah moment, but it's so good.
Yeah, Yeah, agreed.
Why is it so good in this movie?
Do you guys think that if you had never seen this movie and you were introduced to it today, would you like it as much or at all?
I would not.
Oh, man, I don't know.
I would have to say that I would not. Like, it's one of those movies that I have good memories of, and that's why I like it so much. But a movie similar to this now, there's a good chance I would walk out of the theater. Not this exact movie, but, you know, I have a low tolerance for shtick as well.
I think I have a higher tolerance than a lot of other people in this podcast, but I also agree that there are, I don't know, I was thinking about that too. And I think that if the cast were different somehow, like, I don't know, if would you consider like Anchorman or something like that to have a similar level of shtick?
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Similar, but different.
Yeah, I mean, so there are moments when the ingredients come together and it works, but I think those moments are the exception rather than the rule.
Yep.
And this is one of the glorious exceptions.
I think that's a fair critique. I think if I watched it, like if someone said, "Hey, watch this on Netflix," and I press play, I don't know that I would have loved it. If I was at a party and people were watching it, I would probably love it. Like, if I was watching it with people that loved it, I would probably love it. Like, I would get involved. It would become a communal experience as opposed to just sort of like, I don't know about this, you know? So it's got potential for both.
Like the first time that you watched Monty Python and the Holy Grail, like not one person that I know ever watched that without somebody who had already seen it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And if anybody ever watched it without somebody that hadn't seen it, they didn't like it. But every person that I know that watched it with somebody, it's one of those movies that it's always sort of in the background of great comedy quotable movies.
You need like a sponsor.
Right? That's a good way to put it.
To walk you through it.
Kyle, I would also equate it to kind of our viewing, you and me, our viewing of A Mighty Wind in the Uptown Theater.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I love that movie, but that was an amazing experience.
That was definitely the right crowd in which to see it.
Yep.
That was, you described perfectly my experience with Dumb and Dumber. The first time I saw it, I wasn't really in the mood to see it, and it was in the theater. You know, I laughed and everything at certain moments, but I walked out thinking it was kind of stupid. But then I went to see it again with a group of friends, and I've loved it ever since.
Yep.
So
that's how I was with Austin Powers. The first Austin Powers I watched, I'm like, this is just stupid. Then my sister just could not stop quoting it, and I watched it with her, and it's a really enjoyable, funny movie to me now. And if it's on, I'll watch it with people. But the first time I saw it, I just thought it was just hokey and too shticky and stupid. And it was because I didn't watch it with somebody who loved it, and that just made all the difference.
And that's a movie. That's a good example, I think, of how in the first Austin Powers movie, I thought that was a brilliant, you know, spoof parody shtick kind of blend that worked really well. But yet that formula repeated in sequels was just boring and dumb.
Yeah. I think that the key to the success there is just simply a great story. The brand of comedy, you know, can be funny to the right person. And I would be the voice of favor for all these films, Three Amigos included. That shtick is awesome pretty much all the time. and I think the Austin Powers franchise is a great example of the first film being really, really good, perhaps despite the shtick. And then the second and third films basically resting on the shtick and then not doing so well because of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It highlights the limited power of shtick.
Yes.
It does. And
live by the shtick, die by the shtick.
And thankfully, Three Amigos has a great story as well.
Maybe this is, there's been a separate genre of comedies that we have just unearthed. And it's the kind of comedy that you have to see in a group.
The communal shtick genre.
So I'm going to be the, dissenting opinion here because, I've seen a lot of films with a similar silly style of humor, just by myself and loved every minute of it. The common theme in these films might be that they're, animated for children.
Oh, yeah.
But the two of them that come to mind right away are Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. And
which is awesome.
Yeah, awesome. Right?
Yep.
And then also Despicable Me.
Good choices.
Thank you.
And I would put How to Train Your Dragon in there, too.
Ooh, I love that.
I still haven't seen that first one.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
It is really good.
Outstanding. Yep.
Yeah. And
Lee, I think we should call these sponsor comedies.
There we go.
Well, I think what I've learned from all of this is that Mark should be the sponsor because he's the one that can watch it independently and then bring the rest of us into the fold.
Ooh. Mm. Mark, you are the sponsor.
To be fair, though, he is an alcoholic.
It's funny because it's true.
It's funny because it's true.
I prefer to think of him as the Obi-Wan Kenobi of shtick.
Ooh.
There you go. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a spectral figure.
Tomato, tomato.
Tomato, tomato. Jer, now that you've had an appropriate chance to breathe, do you want to talk a little bit about the best leads ever, as you noted in your headline?
Yes, I would. Where to begin? So we've already sort of mentioned a lot of the similar movies, and the one that I will probably pull from in my question or my point is Anchorman. But in watching this movie again for the umpteenth time, like Andy, and looking at it kind of from a more analytical lens now that we're sort of movie analysts to a degree, one of the things that I noticed is that the three leads, the Chevy Chase, Steve Martin, and Martin Short, who at the time were all pretty big name comedians. They were all doing their own thing. They all had their own brand of comedy and their own, you know, characters to pull back, to pull from. And they all could have been a single lead in a movie at that time. In this movie, they really sort of played it as none of them being a true lead actor, and they all kind of had what I would call maybe a minimalist version of themselves. They weren't none of them was trying to overpower the other two, and it was just a great little mix of comedy and comedians. I look at some of the other comedies that each of them did, Chevy Chase and Fletch and National Lampoon, and like Steve Martin in Roxanne or Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Martin Short, you know, in Saturday Night Live with Ed Grimley and some of the characters that he did there. I think if any one of them were trying to do those characters in this movie or trying to be that, I don't think that it would have worked as well. And yeah, I think that's one of the things that in movies like Anchorman and some of the other comedies that are sort of ensemble cast comedies that are coming out now, it's like they write in an opportunity for each comedian to do his thing. And like now, Steve Carell, you do your Steve Carell thing. And then Will Ferrell is going to be Will Ferrell for a while. And then like they each get their sort of little moment to shine or whatever. And it almost becomes them trying to outdo one another, but I don't think that that's necessarily what they're attempting to do, but that's how it comes across a lot. And this movie just feels so much like these three guys playing off of one another and not trying to outdo one another.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think they must have been, all three of them must have been very aware that it could be a too many cooks sort of situation. And if they all tried to do their, you know, their shtick maximally, then it would just get really crowded.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like Ghostbusters in that way.
Yeah,
those four actors kind of do the same thing. I think they play off of each other rather than compete.
Yeah, very much.
You know, there's I think back to bands like Led Zeppelin and The Who, and this is a kind of a weird analogy, but like Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey always tried to one-up each other, and then Keith Moon was always there, like, kind of egging them on. There is potential when that happens to have greatness come out of it, but you usually feel every second of that, like, you're very keenly aware of that, and sometimes that works very well, and sometimes it works not well at all. If it depends how you view those people doing it, whether that's a genuine thing, whether, like, you're egging them on as well. And here, I think that there could have been moments where they could have egged each other on, but instead they chose to do the more balanced view. And I do agree that I think the movie is better off for it. I would have loved to see maybe like one scene where they kind of egged each other on, you know what I mean? Like one example of them really pushing it just to see what it feels like, you know, what it felt like. Cause this was kind of them in their respective primes of sorts. And I would have loved to have each of them have the opportunity to sort of be their own biggest version of themselves. But I think the movie is really good as is. So that's sort of playing with fire a little bit, but it could be really good.
I can't think of too many or any moments in the movie where I think, oh, that is so classic Steve Martin, like, or that's classic Chevy Chase.
The one moment that I'll propose is the magic chance.
Yeah.
Where I think that has to be ad-libbed, where nobody had anything written out for them, and they said, okay, do say something that's gibberish and funny. And they all did, and it
Chevy
was all
Chase
funny.
Especially.
How would you even write out what they said?
chip, Nettie.
Yeah, the Chevy Chase one on that. The hurt.
Like that. It's just sort of gibberish. Trailing off for 10 seconds.
Yeah, there must not be a vowel in that whole thing.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point, Jer. I think that you hit the nail on the head with that. And then last, not quite last, nearly last, three-fourths-ish last, Andy, you talked about the musical aspect of this and how much you enjoyed that. So tell us a little bit about that.
I'm a documented musical fan on this podcast, and I love how the music is a major player in this movie, but it's, we talked about before in another podcast that it's music that doesn't get in the way of the movie. Kind of helps to kind of further things along. It's a nice little break. There's definitely comedy involved in the music, which I appreciate. It's not a song just for a song's sake. The My Little Buttercup scene is, in my opinion, one of the funniest scenes in comedy. And then things like the song around the campfire, you know, I think it's a neat little scene where Chevy Chase and Steve Martin, there's almost, the way that I watch that scene, there's almost like this kind of, you know, these two amigos are the wiser, more experienced ones, and Ned is this kind of, you know, younger, naive one. But then he sings the song, and he sings it much, much better than either Chevy Chase or Steve Martin did. And kind of there's this little look between those two guys. They're like, oh my, look at this. But I just love the element that the music holds within the movie. The singing bush to me is a really funny character. It lends a lot to the scene, which we've all talked about with summoning the invisible swordsman, et cetera. So I like how the music plays a part in this movie. It doesn't cross the line to becoming a musical, where there's, you know, every scene has a song and or a very clear segue into this, you know, like this conversation point trails off into here was the song vamping up and let's sing. Like that's not there because that would be, you know, that'd be silly. But yet my little buttercup is just, it's brilliant.
It's pure gold.
It's pure gold.
And that one of the two songs, that one especially doesn't feel like they're performing a song for us as the audience. They're singing for the customers in the cantina,
the terrified patrons of the cantina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the campfire song is more musical-ish, but I don't know if even that feels like My Fair Lady.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a nice little like kind of moment where, you know, like when the horses start singing, everyone just kind of goes, "Aw, that's a nice little moment."
Because everybody loves a singing horse.
And it's beautifully absurd, too. Yeah. And the turtle.
Turtle. I appreciate, too, and I think that it could very easily have gone the other way. Randy Newman did such a great job writing the music that everything fits within what the movie is. Like, even the theme song to The Three Amigos feels like the theme song to a Western, like Gunsmoke or Bonanza or something.
Yeah, oh, very much.
Like, it feels authentic, and the My Little Buttercup feels like a song. Like, I didn't even realize that was written for the movie. I thought it was an old song from the 20s. and it just felt like a song that they would have performed back in their vaudeville days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was so well written. And I think had it not been well written, those moments would have felt just weirdly out of place.
And I think the soundtrack, the actual score of the film, which was written, I can't remember who was the composer, but it wasn't Randy Newman, but it was someone else. But it's a great score in for the setting because it really truly feels like a Western. Like it lends a credibility, I guess, a little bit to the movie that I enjoyed very much. Where it really got me excited for the action sequences and set the mood very appropriately.
Yeah. Lee, you had some qualms with the slapstick humor, just a little bit, and we've touched on that a bit, but do you want to flesh that out a little bit more? Do you feel like that's been tackled well enough already?
Why do you hate Randy Newman, Lee?
I don't hate Randy Newman. I just, the singing bush scene was just a tad much for me.
God, that's like, my favorite part of the movie.
Even as a 12-year-old kid in the theater, I was like, there's a singing bush? What? But I give it a pass because the rest of the movie is so funny. So, yeah.
Shall they come around the mountain when she comes?
I love that he's singing so hard that he's out of breath. Like, there are moments when he's singing, like he has to go, yeah. And then just keep going.
He's got one job to do. He's a singing bush.
Yeah. And the execution of the singing bush, where it's very obviously somebody behind it, just sort of like, waving the bushes a little bit.
Yeah.
It's just perfect.
Yeah.
Perfectly lo-fi. Yeah.
My favorite moment in that scene is when, after the bush sings for 3 to 5 to 7 minutes straight, with them trying to get its attention to ask it if it is in fact the singing bush, that they finally just give up and assume that it's the singing bush.
Good night, ladies, we're gonna leave you now. Merrily we roll.
Forget
along,
it. My
along,
guess is this is a singing bush.
Let's go summon the invisible swordsman.
Summon the invisible swordsman. Can't believe I'm doing this.
Yep.
Well, I guess it is the singing bush.
Good night, ladies. Oh, good stuff. All right, so to wrap things up here, we've got a little touch on what we've talked about before, which has been there, done that. So movies that were kind of inspired by Three Amigos are very similar to Three Amigos. I'll start out with the fact that the Three Amigos is, again, we talked about in part one, inspired by Seven Samurai. Mark, you're pretty familiar with Seven Samurai. Do you want to give just a quick summary of how they are similar?
Sure. The premise of Seven Samurai... Seven Samurai.
Nailed it.
Yeah. Is that...
careful there.
Yeah. There is representatives from a besieged village go out and try to round up heroes to come back and protect them. And there isn't the aspect that the heroes end up not being real, but we did say that Three Amigos was loosely based on Seven Samurai.
Yes, loosely.
Indeed. Loosely.
And so you all came up with some other ones that were inspired by or very similar to Three Amigos. So if you want to just chime in there as you see fit on ones that you you thought about. Andy, why don't you start us off? Did you have any in that list?
Yeah, I mentioned them earlier. Tropic Thunder and Galaxy Quest, which are both really, really funny movies. I highly recommend you see them. Do you want me to expound a little bit on those?
Kind of? Sure. Go for it.
Tropic Thunder involves... what is originally following the story of these guys making a movie set in the Vietnam War that quickly turns into the actors being flung into the seedy underbelly of the Southeast Asian drug trade, except they don't know it. And then in Galaxy Quest, which is a not so covert Star Trek spoof, which is it's so, so funny. And plays on the, fanaticism of Star Trek fans and their belief that their universe is really, truly real. And the actors in Galaxy Quest finding out that it is, in fact, real.
Mm-hmm.
I think that of those two, and even of some of the other ones that we may mention, I think Galaxy Quest really is the spiritual successor to Three Amigos.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Feeling and the writing.
Appropriately self-referential, but never mm-hmm. too much so. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. In a different time period, a different...
I think of the scene in Three Amigos when Lucky Day gets shot and they're all like, yep, it's real. It's real. There's a, similar scene in Galaxy Quest that is just, it's beautiful.
then they cry.
They start crying.
Yep.
Galaxy Quest, that's been referenced before in one of our episodes when I think it might have been in the Untouchables one where Andy was talking about the Three Amigos and he mentioned something about putting it in a different setting or something like that, like space.
That's right.
And Jer chimed in, oh, you mean Galaxy Quest?
Yep. Yeah.
That sounds familiar. So,
yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bringing it home.
We should indeed figure out how many Jared? Episodes that we suggest that we recast it into space.
Remakers Mark dot 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 into space.
How can we recast My Fair Lady in space? Anyway,
I think it's possible. Jared, did you have any in that list?
I did talk about Tropic Thunder a little bit, but I also threw out just kind of as a similar type idea, but sort of in reverse, Last Action Hero, which was a early mid 90s Arnold Schwarzenegger movie where a kid who is a giant fan of this particular Arnold Schwarzenegger set of movies that's basically kind of a ripoff of just general 80s action movies like Die Hard and Commando and whatever else Arnold Schwarzenegger did. Mm-hmm. He gets actually sucked into the movie through a magic golden ticket. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger and the kid actually get pulled back out of the movie into real life. So Arnold Schwarzenegger as a character from a movie is experiencing real life and being completely confused with why when he shoots the back of a taxi cab, it doesn't explode and why he actually gets hurt when he falls out of a window and things like that. So it's a very different take on kind of the same type of movie, but in a wildly different direction. And I liked the movie. Most people didn't, but I think it's pretty entertaining. And it's basically Arnold Schwarzenegger making fun of the movies that made him famous.
Mm-hmm. One that I had thrown out there was A Bug's Life, which is the Pixar animated film. It's basically exactly Three Amigos in that there's an ant colony. And a swarm of grasshoppers extorts grain from them. They want to be free of these grasshoppers, so they go and they try to find heroes and to rescue them, to fight out the grasshoppers. The heroes that the main character finds turn out to be an acting troupe, and he doesn't realize it. And they go back to the ant colony, not quite realizing that they're going to be fighting.
Yep, that's a great comparison.
Mm-hmm. And in the end, of course, they actually do fight and heroically win the day.
Yay. Spoiler alert.
And of course, A Bug's Life is also could be referenced as a movie that got some of its inspiration from Seven Samurai.
Indeed. Just with the same twist that Three Amigos uses.
All right, that will do it for our discussion of Three Amigos. If you would like to find out more information about any of the actors and actresses or movies discussed in this episode, you can check us out at mathishard.net. Or if you would like to find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast or blogs on the Math is Hard Network, you can find us there as well. So definitely check us out at mathishard.net. If you have feedback you want to give, you can do that via a feedback form. Or if you would like to hit us up on Facebook or Twitter, you can find us at username MathIsHardNet on both of those networks. Our next movie will be Akira, which we'll be discussing in the first episode on July 14th. So definitely check that out. We're going to do kind of a double whammy closer here. We're going to do our traditional closing, our the force be with you, and then we're going to do a little special closing for Kyle Hoff. So, gents, as always, I enjoy your time. I love hanging out with you. Let's have such fun chatting. Until the next time we talk, may the force be with you.
And also with you.